Hello, listeners. This is it. This is the episode number 100. I have to admit, I'm very excited. I really didn't think I was going to hit 100 episodes. I've mentioned it before. I had two or three false starts when I started writing the podcast. I couldn't get my head around a weekly product. I initially designed this thing to always have guests, but I quickly found out that that model was impossible. So I had to accept it was just me and figure out a way to make engaging content, and it took a while. When I go back and listen to the first few episodes, woof, they're rough. And I'm not saying I'm a great podcaster by any means, but I've seen a definitive improvement over these 100 episodes, and I hope you have too. My friends Kevin, John, and Nippur, they reached out to me about a month and a half ago, and they said, we should do something special for episode 100. So that means I had to write an episode 6 weeks in advance. And by the way, it went completely off the rails. The original topic was supposed to be artificial intelligence, and somehow we meandered right over to social media and personal assistance, and it was a really fun episode. A lot of it I edited out because this is a PG podcast. So here it is. I'm Joey Lombardi, and I proudly and gratefully present SourceCast episode 100. Welcome, welcome, welcome. You are all in for a special treat because today in SourceCast episode 100, we have guests. We have John, Nippur, and Kevin, who were on the original guest podcast. I brought them back. Say hello, everybody.
Hello.
How's everybody doing tonight?
Good. A little cold, but we're surviving out here.
How's it in Boston, Nippur?
It's good. Shockingly, it's not snowing today, so that's always a plus. But it is very chilly.
How is it in the barren tundra of Connecticut?
Pretty much the same. Cold, but I think we're supposed to get snow like tomorrow or something.
Typical Connecticut. Ruining a Friday with snow.
That's fine. I'm going skiing for the weekend, so.
Making that lemonade out of lemons.
You know it.
Do you guys know what you're here for? What to talk about today?
Skynet taking over the world.
Skynet, man. That damn Skynet. But we are here to talk about artificial intelligence. And most importantly...
Oh, they took our jam!
They took your jam!
They took your jam!
Are you guys worried about artificial intelligence taking your jobs at some point in the future?
Not at all.
I'm not worried about it, but I feel like I don't know enough yet to say definitively.
Yeah, I agree with John. I'm not worried about that.
Well, what makes you so confident that you don't think your jobs are going to be impacted?
The level of complexity is constantly understated. You and I, we talk about IBM a lot. Well, you mentioned in your podcast, I think it's H&R Block, and they were doing the document ingestion for that, and that took, it was years, and it's so much time and learning that has to happen before you see any kind of results there. Yeah, technology is going to improve on a logarithmic scale, but really a job where you're doing all kinds of different judgment decisions and all kinds of different gateways that this AI is going to have to make these very complex decisions, it kind of adds an order of magnitude where it has to learn over a few years or thousands of documents or whatever. And I think people like to talk about Skynet taking over in 10 years, but I think it's a lot further out.
Yeah, I have to agree with John. So I guess when I answered the question, I should have phrased it in the way of, I'm not worried about it taking over my job in my lifetime while I'm working, but maybe in the future after I've stopped working, it might take over my role. Right now, I think there's still a lot of things that need to be worked out before it's kind of more wide stream.
So let me paint this picture for you. I'm 18 years into my career. And in 20 years, you know, that's close to 40, I'll be thinking about retirement. That could be good or bad for me, because I might be someone earning a high salary and some artificial intelligence is going to wipe me out at the very end of my career, and I'm not going to be able to find a job. The caveat to that is I might be able to skate on out and get out before it becomes a problem. But you guys, my millennial friends, are 10 or 15 years behind me. So when you're close to the end of your careers, or you're reaching your peak in your 50s, and you need that job, and AI is just getting strong, you have no concerns about that?
You know, this is just a total speculation, but I feel like AI is going to have to ramp up. It's going to start with more menial, repeatable tasks, and then work its way sort of up the complexity ladder. Almost 100% of what a lot of us do in our positions involves, you know, interpersonal relations and networking and navigating a business environment. But I think there's a human element that's going to take a long time for AI to acclimate to.
To add on Kevin's point, and I think as that develops and it gets better, naturally businesses will change the jobs that interface with those programs. So you might have somebody who's kind of watching what the program decides, and you're kind of using it to your advantage, but your job has changed so that it could really never make the exact same decision that you would make.
Are you guys familiar with quantum computing?
I was going to make a crappy joke and say I both am and am not.
Quantum computing is like a cluster or a hive of CPU processors strung together that effectively will process every outcome and then assign a weight based on the probability of it happening. So some people say a quantum computer could theoretically predict the future based on algorithms and predictability and probability. But when you start to have that kind of computing power, artificial intelligence becomes infinitely better and more complex. So these things that we're talking about today, a computer's not good at doing this, it's never going to replace that. When you have some machine that could start to process every possible outcome and decide the most probable answer or solution or outcome, that starts to become a much different conversation.
Very Peter Baelish-esque.
Yeah, I just wanted to chime in. I think it's actually funny because in a sense, we have a lot less computing power than these machines will have. And we're kind of asking the questions to ourselves when in reality, to be able to fathom the ability of a computer 30 years down the line, we really don't have that processing power to even know what it's capable of. So I think it's kind of ironic that we're thinking, but we really can't predict it.
Take this other side of it. I read this book, Thank You for Being Late. And it's about artificial intelligence and climate change and just how basically humans are trashing the world. And the book basically says, we create a lot of digital garbage. There's a ton of crap that we're generating. Computers are kind of catching up to our garbage creation, and they're doing stuff with the data that we didn't realize is of any value. How do you feel being a commodity?
Well, I feel like I need a minute to digest.
Yeah, I just blasted you guys.
You're basically asking, how do we feel that all of this information is being collected about us and then like being used for advertisements and other things like that?
Well, it goes beyond just advertising, right? Think about it. You and I have Fitbit Snipur.
Yeah.
Where's that data going? What are they doing with that information? They're aggregating it. Now they're creating a profile of a woman that lives in Boston. So it's literally everything that you're doing, everything that you're producing, every picture that you're taking, every text that you're making is going into some kind of database right now. Someone's using that data. You're the thing that's being bought and sold.
Today, having the whole net neutrality that just, you know, they're starting the repeal process of that.
So FYI, this podcast is being recorded on December 14th, and we're a couple hours into finding out that net neutrality has been repealed. Continue, John. I'm sorry.
It kind of spurred this thought of what if in the future you have a combination of companies like Facebook that are kind of the gatekeepers of certain information and demographic data, and then they also have a machine learning and AI service. I'm just imagining a future where they kind of have a, you need to pay us to access this kind of data. I guess, and that already kind of happens, but I'm just thinking if you're having a future where 90% of stuff is happening through AI and machine learning, is it going to be this constant battle of people are controlling different aspects of data and everybody's paying somebody to, nothing's for free anymore.
That's happening right now. We think of ourselves as consumers, but in the digital age, we are the things that are being bought. Not to mention the fact these companies that support banking, finance, credit, they're digitizing all of our data. So even if you're someone who wants to be living in a cave and not being online somewhere, the reality is your data is probably getting out there anyway.
Not to sound like Mr. Big Business or anything, I think ultimately this is just the logical progression of capitalism in a technical world that we live in. Because if you think about computers, they create logs. It's just what the technology does. As a society, we've gotten to the point where the commoditization of those logs is standard practice, and people are just sort of really starting to talk about it now.
So the thing that's been protecting us is the sheer amount of crap that we produce from a digital perspective. It's an overwhelming amount of data that no one's really been able to figure out how to get a hold of. Well, Amazon and Facebook and Google kind of have, but I think we're still sort of in this bubble of protection because of the sheer volume. But as AI progresses and gets better at aggregating this specific kind of data that we're generating, we're being conditioned to accommodate the tools. The entryways that we communicate with each other, everything's changing, so it could be documented and aggregated and put on that log, Kevin. When all of this information is made available, it's processed via an AI system. Anything could be marketed to you. Anything can be advertised to you. You have a pimple on your face. They cross-reference that. Next thing you know, on your mirror, pimple cream is popping up. Are you okay with that?
I like it. I mean, to a certain degree. For example, CVS receipts. Every time you get a CVS receipt, there's like a million coupons, and it's all based off of what you've purchased in the past. So I think something like that, or what you were saying, if somehow it finds out that you have a pimple and then you get something about pimple cream popping up, if it's something like that, I think it could be helpful. Or if you're using a Fitbit and then you get advertisements for like workouts or other athletic type stuff, I think it's all connected and it makes your life easier and exposes you to better things sometimes.
What about when somebody on Tinder, I don't even know what the good swipe and the bad swipe is, but they swipe you away and then the next thing you know, you start getting an advertisement for, you know, a pint of chocolate ice cream. When does it get too invasive?
I think it's probably already there now, but, you know, it's just going to get more and more in depth over the years. As Kevin kind of said, we're really, it's just the way it's going to go. And you keep talking about how everything's getting plugged together. It's just the natural progression of things that we're always using a device. We're always tracking location. We're always inputting data somewhere. So I don't even know if we have a choice. I mean, yes, we may not like it, but just by existing and using the internet, you kind of don't have a choice but to be plugged into the framework.
I think what you're saying is true, that some of these things are making our lives more convenient, but there's no way that we personally can control the limit. So sometimes we could be happy about the technology improving because we think it's making our lives better, but we have no idea in the future if it could cross that line and then it becomes more invasive and it starts affecting our life in a negative way.
Just so you know, I'm basically playing hardcore devil's advocate since you guys are also agreeable with each other. Somebody has to be the dissenting voice here.
I'll dissent for sure. I think we've crossed that line already. The internet of things that exists and is being built up more and more every day, that is where I start to get really uneasy about all this technology. There's this Twitter account I follow called the Internet of
Sounds amazing.
Yeah, you send me a lot of your stuff, actually.
It cites a lot of examples of how smart devices or other pieces of technology like that just fail miserably. There's an umbrella, a smart umbrella that's tied into the Weather Channel. So unless the Weather Channel says it's raining, it won't open. So there's just a lot of stuff that I feel like we're not ready for yet as a society to be putting all this technology in, but it's happening rapidly.
You beautiful, beautiful man. You gave me the most loveliest segue to another topic that I wanted to hit. And that's basically China. So if you read the last couple of supplier reports, I've been hinting at sort of a thread with China, especially with artificial intelligence. China is basically using AI to monitor their people. So group threads and group chats where you may be criticizing a politician. There's literally a specific example where there was a group chat of friends that were making fun of some official that got busted for having an affair. They got called into the police. It's a different society than the US, but I can see a future where we're not that far away from a private communication amongst friends being used against us. Democracy or not, this is my concern. And the technology between the Internet of Things and artificial intelligence is going to enable a police state. What are your thoughts on that?
We're already there. I mean, it's crazy. Edward Snowden basically pulled the wool off of our eyes and we're still just kind of sitting here okay with what's happening. I mean, the NSA is collecting all kinds of data on us and the situation you described is probably in progress. They're probably way more secretive about it than China. I mean, I would expect everything to be monitored now.
A lot of people say, I have nothing to hide. I used to say that, but there could be this big brother element to things. If you have a dissenting political opinion than the current regime. Again, let's just talk about the net neutrality situation from today. I don't know if you guys were reading that a lot of the positive or pro comments for repealing net neutrality, they discovered that a lot of those people are dead.
Right. Aren't they spamming? They're using people's identities to create like millions of fake submissions.
That's exactly right.
Comments, yeah.
It's Russia. It's China.
Let's say China.
Nipur, you've been quiet.
I haven't really thought about a lot of this stuff. I think right now I'm enjoying a lot of the conveniences of this kind of technology. Fun example. So I just went to India in November and I went into the Bank of America app to put a travel alert on. And they have a new feature where if you allow them to constantly check your location, even when you're not using the app, it helps prevent against them thinking that your like card is being charged fraudulently. So for example, if I normally purchase things in Boston and then all of a sudden I purchase something in India, it can check where my location is and then it'll say like, okay, maybe it'll prompt me to confirm that it's fraudulent before it just shuts it down automatically.
But I wonder how easily can someone's phone, you know, IP address be spoofed to have Bank of America think that you're actually in India?
All right, Debbie's. I was trying to be positive.
I think I'm the only person that I know that has never had a bad experience with Bank of America.
No, I love Bank of America. I use the app all the time. I never use the website, but the app is the convenient.
This podcast sponsored by Bank of America.
Here at Bank of America, we love millennials. Use our app.
Is there anonymizing data collection? Is that kind of like a solution to collecting data where you need to, but not tying it back to the individual's personal data? I mean, I don't know if that's feasible or if it kind of gets around the ultimate problem of data being collected everywhere and you're ultimately going to be followed by this everywhere. But is that something that could be the middle ground?
With Fitbit, when they supposedly share the data, it's supposed to kind of strip out the personal identifiers. Same thing with Google. Google theoretically says they do that, but clearly they have this massive profile about you. Think about every search that you make that they have a record of.
Sad. We just go right back into sadness every time.
Thinking about someone viewing all of my Google searches is actually traumatic.
One minute I'm Googling some cartoon character and their background for Ben because I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then the next minute, I'm reading something about Trump.
I'll consciously try to make sure if I'm Googling something I don't want to be like included in my profile, I'll do like incognito. But I don't know if that really changes anything. Or, for example, YouTube, because the algorithm will just pull in whatever videos you're watching. And it's like you're watching some messed up video that somebody told you to watch. And then next thing you know, every recommended video is some weird thing you don't want.
You guys are way more tech savvy than I am. Sometimes I'll Google things that are probably a little bit skeptical. Like, let's say something happened in the news. I don't know, something about like a terrorist attack. And I get paranoid that I'm like, what does jihad mean? And then they're going to be like, oh, this girl's searching about jihad. That's the kind of stuff that I get worried about.
I feel like the stories you hear about the NSA or, you know, the FBI going after people based on their logs, it's very targeted. They catch, a potential terrorist because he Googled flight info for this country on this day, and they had a lead that that's where something was happening. And then they figured out that his IP address was coming from, you know, some apartment in this neighborhood.
Honestly, I don't really have an issue with them sort of doing that from a national security perspective, or I'm less so concerned. But I'm making that statement based on the conditions that I'm aware of today. If things go south in the country and they start using the technology to suppress the voice of the people and to eliminate voices that don't agree with the political machine, that's when things start to get hairy. And we've seen this before. We're seeing this in Middle Eastern countries. We saw this in Egypt. They were using social media to organize, and then social media was used to take people down. We take certain things for granted here in this country.
That was definitely the serious line that got crossed. People still found a way to overcome when cell towers and communication networks were shut down. Very soon after, there were apps developed where you could...
They were doing mesh networks.
You could text with people via Bluetooth. So anyone that was nearby, you could text them. They used that technology to organize protests and assemblies and get news out. As humans, we're pretty resilient and we'd figure something out.
Maybe it needs to go to the extreme in a negative sense, and then naturally the technology blossoms out of that and we kind of come back to the mean.
In that Thank You for Being Late book, I forget the author's name, he basically says that a small group of people can use technology to make massive impact, to get their message out there, to organize. But that same technology can be used for such nefarious things because these small splinter cells of terrorists can use that same technology to organize and do terrible things.
Fun times.
Technology has the ability to cause problems, and it has the ability to resolve problems.
Facebook has this huge problem with people kind of getting stuck in these echo chambers, and really, you know, you'll like all these articles that agree with your viewpoint, and you're just constantly fed the same opinion. It's a major problem with the United States, but I think it's a great opportunity. You know, we're talking about machine learning and AI, somehow assigning scores to different perspectives and kind of finding a way to push opinions that people may not have on their own, things that are new viewpoints. That could be a huge way of solving this issue where we're so politicized. In order to change your viewpoint, you have to kind of have the open mind.
If you could maybe do it in a more subtle way, where it might be articles that kind of go with what you would normally read. But then I think John had mentioned if you maybe like throw in a couple of articles here and there that are from a different viewpoint, and it won't be completely like, oh, I'm going to this website that's exactly like what I think, and this website that's exactly not how I think. It could be kind of like sprinkled and more open with a mix of both ideas. And then people might be a little bit more willing to kind of see things from the other side.
I look to Reddit a lot as like a microcosm of the media community. And obviously it has tons of flaws, but you kind of use the upvote system as a way of weeding out the good content from the bad. And of course they manipulate it, but that kind of idea where you say, okay, we got this opposing viewpoint B and it's been well credited because a lot of people like it. And then you can kind of use that as your validation to bring it into whatever openness platform we're talking about.
The problem with Reddit is, especially from the upvoting perspective, there's a specific type of person that goes to Reddit. Like, my dad's not going to be on Reddit. He's never going to use it.
Right.
My mom's never going to be on Reddit. They don't even know what that is. There's a type of person that goes there and interacts and builds a community there. And you might have somebody on the left and you might have somebody on the right, but it's still kind of, on some spectrum, the same person or demographic. There's a specific age group. There's a certain vibe that you're going to get from someone who's a user of Reddit.
Absolutely. I mean, I think I'm really just using it as an example of if there's some way that you can quantify value of media information. I totally agree with you. I mean, it's a very subset of people. It tends to be the liberals. It tends to be the technology-oriented kind of Elon Musk-loving people.
The issue with that is that with, you know, sites like Reddit or with that type of model that you're discussing is that the people that are most likely to get online and discuss any issue, whatever it is, are going to be the people that have a very strong viewpoint. It's tough to get an accurate representation of like that middle part of the bell curve where most people are. I mean, obviously, as humans, we gravitate towards people that we are similar to and that we get along with. But in everyday life, you still have to interact with and deal with and accommodate people of different viewpoints, whether it's at work or at any other event or activity. Whereas online in the digital realm, I think it enables a different kind of human interaction that can be either more polarizing or more isolating.
You just hit on something, because this was another thing that I was going to bring up. I think that this technology, this echo chamber effect, artificial intelligence and filtering, it is changing human behavior. I don't think that people can have polite discourse anymore, or it's certainly eroding.
It's just like YouTube comment sections. You could have a video with like a cute cat playing with a ball of string, and there'll be somebody who's like ranting about politics in the comment section.
Or they'll somehow say that ball of yarn is bad for the cat and you're going to kill the cat.
Right. How dare you?
Well, there's a guy who he was a Facebook exec, and he basically just recently said, I would never let my kids on Facebook. And I think it's bad. It changes the way your brain is wired, because those likes and those positive comments, you're looking for that dopamine hit.
Well, that's absolutely true. Like, you can't deny when you post something on Instagram, if you don't get enough likes, you get a little bummed out.
I saw an article similar to the one that you're talking about, where one of the guys that was, I think, like a creator or one of the earlier people on Facebook was saying that when they first created Facebook, they knew that what they were making could spin out of control and it could change the way society interacts and things like that. But they just kind of made it, and you kind of have to just wait and see where it goes. But I do agree where now it changes the way that we all interact. Like, everyone that you talk to might not be on the same social media platforms that you're on, but I think almost everyone is on some sort of platform. For example, I used to use Facebook a lot more when I was younger. But now I don't really go on it that often, except to maybe look at pictures. Whereas my dad, who's 60 years old, is on Facebook all the time.
Facebook, especially with immigrants, people use the social media to connect with their families and people they haven't seen in a long time, because now people have access. My aunt is on Facebook a lot. My family comes from a remote town in Italy, and I think phone connections were a problem up until about 20 years ago, and obviously the expense of making phone calls up until the digital age, it was astronomically expensive and time-restrictive to make connections with people. Or you can write a hand letter, which, that's awful. Your dad probably connects with people he hasn't talked to in a bazillion years.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think they've had like high school reunions, and the only way it was made possible was because people connected through Facebook.
See, this is the positive aspect of technology, John, that you were looking for. It's not all bad.
Yeah. Our age group, we use Facebook, we grew up with it, and then we're kind of burning out on it. And then our parents and like our grandparents are kind of finally learning it. And then they're like, holy crap, like I can do all kinds of stuff on this platform. So my mom's the same way. She's crazy involved in Facebook, Twitter, and I'm way less involved.
I don't know if people in our generation are using it less because people in their generation are using it more, or I think it kind of naturally happened where there are more and more different types of platforms being created, and us as a generation might be more adaptive and it's easier for us to like pick up these new platforms, whereas Facebook has been around for so long. So people in older generations are finally, like, 10 years later, getting used to them and figuring out how to use them.
Part of me thinks that we're using those technologies for fundamentally different reasons. When we were introduced to Facebook, most of us, I'm assuming, were in, you know, middle school or early high school. So as a means to connect with people, to connect with your friends, it probably didn't have much of an effect because we were already so connected, seeing friends and relatives all the time. So it became a, oh, here's what I had for breakfast today. Eventually you realize that no one cares. You sort of grow out of it and use it less. But for an older generation, that's not what they're using Facebook for. It's more to get in touch with people that they haven't, you know, connected with in a while. So I think that might be more lasting than it was for us.
These technologies, as they become more plentiful, they're going to fill a niche. Facebook is for posting pictures of my kid, for my mom, and for my aunts. LinkedIn has sort of become my social feed, where I'm sort of connecting with colleagues. So there isn't that friend social media thing, because if I want to connect or talk with a friend, I do not want it public at all. I don't want anybody reading any of that information. That aspect of my social portfolio does not exist.
Yeah, could you imagine today going to a friend's Facebook wall and just posting something and then having a whole conversation back and forth?
No.
It's absurd.
That takes it back to my original point. So to some degree, you are conscious of the fact that you don't want certain things put out there, whether it's from a tool perspective or from a public or social nature. There's some degree of filter that you guys are subconsciously making. There's a reason why you guys gravitated towards Snapchat, right?
For the nudes?
No, not for the nudes.
I know.
I think it's a good blend of public and private. We're talking about having conversations with your friends in private, but then you flip over to the story and you can kind of post your public video of you at the concert or whatever. So it's instantaneous between private Snapchats in between each other, private chats in between each other, and then completely social stories and things like that.
I may be in the minority here because obviously a lot of the appeal of Snapchat is the privacy and that your pictures and your messages disappear. But I feel like the biggest convenience of Snapchat is that it provides a level of informality to conversation and media that is actually kind of nice.
Now, sometimes if I see something and I want to send a picture to my friend, I'll probably use Snapchat to send them the picture, not just because of the whole informality piece that you talked about, but even for something as simple as pictures take up storage in my phone. And if I take a picture and then send it to someone, it's in my text messages and it's in my photo library. And then I have to go delete it from two places. Whereas if I send it in Snapchat, they can view it whenever they want. It disappears. It doesn't take up space on their phone and it doesn't take up space on my phone either.
This is going to be a great marketing session for someone at Snapchat.
Did you see the article how these two bros at Snapchat were discussing that they were going to get hookers over the weekend? And they were doing it on a conference line.
No.
Somebody had already joined the conference line. They were just sitting there listening to these guys.
Oh, my God. But if you're that third party on the line and you don't speak up immediately, like if you just sit there and listen to that conversation, you will never be trusted in the office again.
Don't be talking about hookers at work, man. You talking about hookers at work, you get what you get. We're going to have to cut all this out. Okay, we've been going for a little while. I don't know what the exact number is when I edit this down. But one of the other things that I wanted to talk to you about was brand loyalty. I've talked a lot about this in the last few podcasts, about how you get locked into ecosystems. Do you feel a specific brand loyalty, or do you like having specific products in your house? Does it make you nervous that you may have a microphone that is constantly on and recording and listening to everything that you're doing inside your house?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But you're going to get that with any brand.
Do you trust one brand over another in that case then?
Not really. Probably the only reason that I still am an Apple guy and have been getting iPhones is because of iMessage. And like the delivery notifications are just so satisfying that if I switched over to like Android and had to have like the green text, oh my, that would just be so anxiety inducing.
I think Android phones tell you when text messages are delivered.
Oh, then I'm switching.
It depends on the app. Yeah, if you're texting somebody on Android, we won't get the delivery or read receipt if we're interchanging platforms. So I'll chime in on your earlier question. So I just bought a Google Home, and it was almost strictly because they just reduced the price, and I'm wondering if they're just trying to clear inventory. But I do kind of think about it sometimes. The appeal of it's already almost wearing off. I play music through it. I kind of check the weather and things like that, but I'm already realizing the limits of it. And I do wonder, I mean, it has to have the microphone on to be able to identify you saying, hey, Google, they say they're deleting this data, but I mean, really, at what point does that happen?
Nippur, I dropped a microphone in your house. How do you feel about that thing?
It doesn't bother me that it's always listening, but I don't think I use it to its full potential. I don't feel comfortable using it to like order things. And it's not because I'm worried it's going to order the wrong thing, but I think I've always gotten used to going online and looking at something, reading reviews, and making, like, I take a really long time to make a purchasing decision. But I do like it. It's very convenient. And then to answer your other question about kind of brand loyalty. So I don't think I purchase Apple products necessarily for the fact that I love Apple and I want everything to be Apple and I want all my money to go to Apple, but it's more of the convenience of them being able to be synchronized together. So I have an iPhone and then an iPad and an Apple TV and things like that. It's more of the convenience factor of not having to log into something multiple times or being able to go from one device to another seamlessly. That's really why I think I tend to have more brand loyalty towards Apple, for example.
So let's say that Siri gets a little bit smarter and Apple starts to introduce devices that Siri is featured on, like a Home Assistant. Because I don't think they have one now, right? Apple doesn't have a Home Assistant, do they?
No, not right now.
Well, they have Apple Home, but I don't actually know what that is.
Let's assume that across the devices, Siri gets to know you guys. It knows little personal details about you. It becomes a little bit more conversational. I'm not talking insanely advanced, just a little bit more sophisticated. Would that be something that drives even more brand loyalty to you and buy more of those products, knowing that, oh, when I get the Siri home device, it's going to totally know me and I'm going to just turn the thing on and it's going to know my musical preferences, yada, yada, yada.
If I already had a product from a different brand, I don't think that I would abandon it and buy the Apple product. But if I didn't have any of those products to begin with and I was trying to figure out what to choose, I would definitely go for the Apple product.
Yeah, I think as technology improves, it's only going to dramatize that further, because when you have your Siri assistant constantly understanding your language better and getting better through machine learning, it's just going to make those efficiencies between the products even more great.
So we're going to start to wrap this thing up. So guys, how do you feel about 100 episodes of this podcast?
It's That's very exciting. I'm really so proud of you.
Did you think it was going to go 100 episodes?
I think I thought you would get 100 episodes earlier than you did.
I mean, it's pretty much one a week.
Oh, see? Yeah, okay. So that's true.
I don't physically have it in me to do more than one a week.
Oh, wow. One a week. I didn't even realize that. I don't know why I thought...
I think I did like 48 in year one. I think I did more this year.
So I think I expected you to do like 100 in a year, but now that doesn't make sense because that would be a lot in just that short of time.
Just get us on every week talking about like news headlines for 10 minutes.
Has Allison ever been on the podcast?
Sort of. I recorded an individual comment that she made. It's not like a live interview.
Does she not want to
be? Bees is a podcast routine now.
Yeah, Ben's was the best.
Oh, everybody likes Bees Kiss because he sings Stumpy Woman.
Does Allison ever want to be on like a guest one like we are? Or no, she doesn't really like care.
I don't think that she really cares about this podcast at all. Because sometimes I'll be like, hey, did you listen to this week's episode? I thought you would like this one thing that I threw in there. And she just gives me this blank look like, you really
should. She's like, shut up, Joey.
She's like, you really expect me to, yeah.
I picture the look in my head without even seeing you.
Like, it's like mild concern because she thinks she might get yelled at. But then like the extreme indifference of it just overrides everything else.
Oh, God.
And it's not even an inconvenience to her. I really go out of my way to record when she's not around, because for a tiny woman, she's very loud and stompy. She makes a lot of background noise.
It's all right. The podcast can be your thing.
I try to incorporate the family.
I like the segment with Mean Joe. That was great.
Everybody loves him. No matter what I do with him, and it's not, it doesn't happen often. It's very Spartan. But whenever I do a project with my father, everybody loves it. But seriously, guys, I want to thank you. Not only for participating in this particular episode, but your continued support and feedback throughout the last 2 years.
Absolutely. I would do this more often.
You guys really keep me motivated. You're like my core audience. You make me like, oh, I got to do this. I got to do a better job for Nippur, Kevin, and John.
That's so charming.
Hopefully, you'll be on sooner. And also, hopefully, we can do a 200th episode.
Yeah.
200. That'll be like a year from now, so.
No, that'll be 2 years.
That'll be a live episode.
Well, what's a live episode? Like everybody just comes over the house and we just record?
Like live from like the company Christmas party or something.
He's got the video going though, so soon come.
All right, you guys are great.
Merry Christmas.
All right. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Merry Festivus for the rest of us.
Yes.
Thank you again.
Bye, friends.
You're a gentleman and a scholar.
We'll do this soon.
Definitely.
Bye.
Right, take care. Bye-bye.
And that's all we have for this week. You can find Dwarfscast on iTunes, Google Music, and all of your favorite podcasting applications. Sourcecast is recorded in bucolic Mandarin, New Jersey, and it's produced by my dad. The outro is performed by me, Ben Lombardi, and music is provided by Patrick Lee. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.